Orlando, I can hear you.
I am on mute.
Yeah, there you go.
No worries. So welcome to another episode of the Career Talks Real Talk podcast. I'm your host, Orlando Haynes, here with my amazing co-host, Miss Tiffany Human. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Yep, it is Friday. So super excited. It's going to be, I think, a good weekend, hopefully, for everyone. Yeah. But definitely excited about the topic as well that came up during our last episode. So I think it's something we should definitely tackle.
Oh, it's a big one. Yeah. The infamous job description.
Nope. Exactly.
And how to navigate this, this whole list of skills and competency and responsibilities and what it means for you as a candidate.
Exactly. So with that, I'm sure, you know, this is not geared towards any particular company. And of course, every company doesn't fall under this umbrella of, you know, having job descriptions that may not be at the best. So we're just kind of going over some things to kind of demystify and better understand, and maybe some ways that companies, if they're listening, can improve on, right? I think there's always room for improvement, which is always the biggest room we have. So look forward to, you know, diving in. So I think one of the biggest areas, right, it's always at the top, is the clarity and the simplification of the job descriptions.
Yeah.
Maybe overshooting, the expectations are too high of the role, especially if it's visible of what the salary and, you know, the compensation may match to it. And you start to wonder, who's writing these? Are these being reviewed? Are they being updated? And what that looks like. And then from a recruiter side, you get to wonder why there's such a vast, you know, skill set and range of applicants that apply, because it could just throw people off to where, like, I'm going to apply anyway, because some of this don't even make sense, but I'll just go for it. You just never know, right?
Oh, 100%. I always kind of laugh when I see these job descriptions for entry-level positions requiring, you know, 5 to 7 years of experience. You know, there just seems to be a disconnect somewhere of, you know, do we understand what entry level means? And, you know, it could be very discouraging for applicants, I would say, especially building off of our last session together, Orlando, and just so much movement in the job market and a lot of amazing talent that are looking for opportunities right now. I'm definitely seeing an uptick in that trend as well of people looking to make a new job, land a new job, make a career pivot. So there's a lot of activity happening. And so being able to really decipher a job description to best position your candidacy is really critical. Mm-hmm. But it's also about kind of having a bit of an objective lens of how you fare against that criteria and when it's really worthwhile for you to apply versus maybe putting your energy elsewhere, right? I'd say like one of the big downfalls I see with this is a little bit more common amongst professional females, but, you know, we do still see it from time to time against men as well, is almost ruling ourselves out of applying because we don't meet this so-called wish list of criteria, or it says, oh gosh, okay, we're missing one or two or three things. So I'm not going to stand a chance. I'm not going to apply. That could be really limiting because, again, we never know how that employer is weighting that specific criteria. Mm-hmm. So maybe the things that you actually have as a candidate is what they value most, but you're not giving yourself the chance to actually know if that's the case by not putting your application in. So there's definitely those facets that are a little bit tricky to navigate. I'd love to get your thoughts on that too, Orlando. You've seen the same.
Exactly. I love that angle because, and here's two points I'll bring up. One is, when job descriptions, you know, sometimes there are job descriptions that are just reposted after someone exits that role, right? So it's just a refreshing of the posting. It's not let's take it off the table. Let's dissect it. What do we truly need based on where we're going with this role, this department, the expectations, and then revamping it correctly. It's simply just a refresh. And sometimes there are roles that are refreshed, the job description, based on what the last person performed, but necessarily don't need, right? So someone elevated the role because that was their talent. Him or her was just a super performer. Say like, okay, great. We need someone who can do this. And you may not, right? You may not need that because again, if someone's coming at that high scale or expanding the role, then you got to expand the compensation to match.
Yeah.
The other piece is I don't think the job seeker is asking the detailed questions about the specific line items within a job description. They'll ask you about yours on your resume, but are we turning that conversation around and saying, it says here, X, Y, Z, Z, Z. How important is that to this function here? Because I just want to make sure I can align my skills with what the expectations are.
Yeah. Right?
Job seekers need to be able to have that job description, bring it to the interview, right? Have it in front of you when you're on the phone with a recruiter or if you're face to face. And as they're dissecting a resume, dissect the job description. Let's have an open dialogue to say, where does it match? Because you might find that a lot of that stuff is not necessarily needed.
Yeah.
And you can ask that to the recruiter, to the hiring manager, just to make sure. And also, like we all can attest to this, we've had conversations where there's parts of the role that's expected that's not even on the job description. Yeah. And we're like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Didn't know that. Okay, well, great. I have skills in here. I didn't see it in the job description, but through verbal communication, we're uncovering what's really happening. So there's that disconnect between either recruiters or HR management, between that department manager or that hiring manager on what they really, truly need. So there needs to be a lot more of that to say, hey, we're going to send it back to you. You tell me what you need. I'll tell you what's realistic, what the compensation may be for this role. Do we have the budget before we launch it again? Yeah.
Mm, yeah. Those are such good points, Orlando. And I love the point that just came in from one of our listeners here, Stan. Most employers will make trade-offs. I imagine a job description is a wish list when shopping for a new home. It's so true, right? You know, again, you don't know where the employer is putting their real priority focus. So if you essentially meet roughly 70%, even 60% of the criteria sometimes, but I would say probably closer to a 70% plus given the amazing talent that's in the market right now, right? If there's 20% of things that you kind of match up on, maybe it's not the right job description. If you meet 100%, well, maybe you're not aiming high enough, right? So you could actually use a job description too as a bit of a gauge of, are you going for the right roles? You know, like if you really feel like I can nail all of this, even if it's a wish list of a job description, like I've done this, I've done this, I've done this, and you're going through the whole thing and you're like, I can totally do this role. That then begs the question of, okay, well, maybe you're underselling yourself. Maybe you actually should be going for a slightly more senior role that is going to feel like a challenge where you do maybe meet 70% of the criteria and possibly part of that's going to be learned in the role. Because I think we can all attest to the fact that regardless how qualified we are on a job description, there's always going to be that learning curve in a new position, always, especially if it's with a new organization altogether, right? Not necessarily a move within an existing organization, but a new company, you're going to have a learning curve. They're going to have their ways of working. They're going to have their own systems. They're going to have their own trainings, right? So just factoring that in too, if you can meet the core essence of what they're looking for and match that against your strengths, your skills, your competencies, your achievements, you're already off to a really good start. And again, also keep in mind, there's always ways of positioning your accomplishments in a way that matches up. So one question I get a lot, Orlando, especially for roles that are more leadership oriented or have people management elements tied into it, the question I'll get often is, well, you know, I've never really like had that people management experience, but I want to go for a people manager role. So it's almost like the chicken or the egg, you know, it's like you want that, you haven't had the experience, but at one point everyone has to have not had experience as a people manager to become a people manager, right? It's like that transition. So there's always ways in this particular example where you could framework that you've done to show that you still have those transversal skills, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's been mentoring new hires. Maybe it's been building out training programs for the organization. Maybe it's been managing you know, a multitude of different stakeholders internally and externally that, sure, they're not directly reporting into you, but you still have, you know, management of people mm-hmm. and the way that you're aligning other people towards common goals. Like that is a sign of management skills right there, right? So there's always ways we could kind of get creative, even if it's not classical, like description of what they're looking for in that role, if this is a position that you're really excited about.
Yeah, love that. Love that. There's so much to unpack in that. Tons of comments are coming in. So I appreciate from Stan and then Brian and then Susan. So appreciate everyone's comments. It's so crucial. And I think from the job seeker perspective, they lose power. There's this feeling as if you're in the hot seat and it shouldn't be like, I mean, we might've mentioned this on a previous call, but that is a mutual discussion you're having with an employer. Don't feel less than and feel as though, again, you're the turkey on the table and they need to pick you apart to see if you're a good fit. Absolutely not, right?
Yeah.
Do not do that. You have to have the same confidence as they do. And again, like I said earlier, dissecting the job description, find out if there's gaps in what they're thinking the role should be, especially if you know you're qualified, right? You can fill in the gaps for them to say, well, no, you know, I think this software is probably better suited based on what you're looking to do with, you know, the department or project, et cetera. I think here's ways we can improve efficiency. Start sharing some of those ideas and just say, based on how your job description is written, I think you're looking for a person of X, you know, skill set.
Yeah.
Where I can add value is this, but I would always, again, bring it back to what they're presenting you, showing the value you can bring. And so give that feedback to the recruitment and the HR team and hiring managers about those job descriptions. You'd be like, hey, you know, this is kind of a bit dated in what you're, you know, in how you're explaining the skill sets. I think a better way that you'll capture great talent. And I think if you have certain conversations, you start to become an advocate in showing how your skill sets could be a value add to that organization. And say, you know, I'll be happy to, you know, the opportunity works out, I'll be happy to participate in assisting and improving your, you know, your job descriptions going forward so we can capture the talent I think the organizational needs, right? Be someone with a voice in those conversations and hold employers accountable. You know, throughout several podcasts that we've done together, Tiffany, you know, I'm an advocate for putting the onus back on both the employer and the job seeker. Do not put yourself in a hot seat thinking they're just supposed to poke holes and see if you're worthy. That is not how that should go. Their job description is on display. So many areas we can dive into. I made some quick notes, but those are my thoughts on that point there. But yeah, great points on what you brought up.
Oh yeah, I love that. And you know, one thing that's also really often underestimated in job descriptions, and we don't always see it come through, but is actually one of the main criteria of employers selecting who they choose. It's even beyond the hard skills. Honestly, it's even beyond the soft skills. It's the motivation and attitude that they feel from the candidate. And I've, you know, had the pleasure of interviewing dozens of C-level executives and VP level executives this past year. And this was the common theme that I continually heard, Orlando. It was, you know, when they're hiring for top talent, that top 1% that, you know, I'm all about, right? It was actually a lot more prominent in the motivation, the attitude, even for very, very functionally hard skill-driven roles that require specific degrees, rather, you know, law or consulting or, you know, finance, all of these different industries. It was a lot around the person themselves. Right. And that they're like, you know what, we can always teach some of these other things, right? We can give trainings, we could do this and that. But the thing that we can't really teach someone is giving them that energy, giving them that passion, giving them the motivation to be a team player, to be collaborative, to, you know, never feel too entitled beyond the work, right? To get their hands dirty. Like, these are those skills that you'll never see in a job description, or very rarely so. But is ultimately that fit, because they want to see, hey, can this person actually mesh on the team? Can they contribute to the culture that we're creating here? Are they someone that, you know, will be dependable, but also, you know, of course, I'm not saying not have boundaries or anything like that. That's a whole other topic that's extremely important. but more around just creating the right energy that is going to have people want to work with you. Right. And so I think for all of the people that are listening to this or joining us live, keep that in mind that your essence, your brand, your energy holds such a huge weight in the recruitment process beyond the job description, right? Yes. Okay. You can check off the things that you meet and again, meet it, match it around that 70% or so alignment, which is already a good starting point, but where the real magic happens, you know, if you get to that interview stage, if you've made it through and you've had that resume that's captured this all very well, let yourself shine through because that is going to be the magic recipe that is distinct to you. There's only one you in the world, right? And so you want to make sure that that's coming through with flying colors.
Love it. Love it. So that brings me to this point here when you say really not necessarily diving in and looking at the hard skills, tech skills. Obviously, if it's a technical role, you need those. But right, the person who he or she is, and I'm not a fan of the word cultural fit. I love cultural ad. Because you want the needle to be pushed as you bring in each new person, right, to progress the organization going forward, love the goals, that. The missions, et cetera. So the cultural fit, I think, is too antiquated and can keep an organizational stagnated from an innovation standpoint, creativity, culture, diversity, et cetera. And so you need that and you need the right people in place who think like that, who are doing the frontline interviews.
Yeah.
Right. What are their mindset? Are they super, you know, they may love the candidate, but they're sticklers on certain skill sets. Again, I think I put TA on the front line too. You need to have better conversations with your leadership and really becoming partners to say, hey, I know what we're looking for on paper. I understand the culture and what we're looking for because we've had discussions, HR, you know, not HR manager, but hiring manager. And I truly think you need to talk to this person. Yes, they don't have this and yes, they don't have that, but have the conversation. I'm advocating for this person because I think they can be, you know, a cultural add in what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And so push it, we've done it in the past. And when I say we, I'm talking about the community of recruiters and TAs. And then I put the onus back on the hiring managers.
Yeah.
Stop being sticklers for certain pieces. You need to hire for the person and what the talent they can bring. And like you said, grow into and be trained for.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, if they don't align with 75%, it's a waste of our time. You may be the blockage in the growth in your organization because you're thinking that way. Yeah.
That's such a good point. Yeah. And you know, even when we're looking at job descriptions, try to pull out the key themes that you're seeing as a candidate, right? Because there could be a lot, like a whole laundry list of things, but chances are there's going to be some common parallels throughout the job description. And so if you're really capturing those points really well at both measuring it against your own professional track record and the skills and strengths that you have and what you've established in terms of your competencies, there's already going to be a good fit there, right? And you use the job description very strategically to inspire the examples that you really want to highlight that will best meet that. Of course, you know, part of this can tie with how we position our resume, how we, you know, maybe elevate our LinkedIn profile. If there's a certain target role we're really aiming for, we want to make sure that our LinkedIn profile can also emulate a lot of that as well and have a good synergy there. But I really like using the job descriptions as like inspiration for really aligning your personal and professional brand to that, right? It could even be good insight. If let's say you're exploring new paths and you're not exactly sure which one you want to land on, just looking at job descriptions, of course, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but looking at them just to kind of get a sense of, okay, these types of roles seem to really be emphasizing XYZ types of skills, whereas these types of roles are focused a lot more on like the people piece, the collaboration piece. I like that part more. Maybe I should start diving a little bit more in that direction and layer on with networking. And I know we've had a whole session on that, Orlando, and the importance of that, right? But it's almost like clues, I should say, that allow you to get clarity on exactly where you should be focusing your efforts. That way, when you are landing upon these job descriptions, yes, there's how to kind of filter through the actual points that they share, but also using it as an alignment checkpoint if this is actually a role that would suit you best and also help bring out your best towards your longer-term career goals.
And so that's really good. Like there's so much that we can go down a massive rabbit hole on certain topics, which I love. And again, definitely love the engagement. So one of the things I've seen missing too, and I've seen a small percentage. And when I say small percentage, maybe a half a percent, where job descriptions will speak to their culture. Right. And so if they can highlight what the culture is like, make it more fun, make it more attractive, you know, to see. And it's not just boring text after text of skill set and expectations and travel and this. What's it like being in your organization? You know, I think there's an area we can condense some of the, you know, the job description surface and let that be part of the verbal conversation, or just be more creative in how we explain that, but leave room for the cultural piece. If you have a diversity initiative, you know, to capture more diversity, leave room to talk about your initiative on every single job description. I think that will start to bring more talent. Obviously, we know this is a pillar that organizations need, is more diverse talent. But speak to that. Don't just have it plastered on some, you know, corporate document and you're not moving, you know, moving it forward. Have it more attractive, more accessible and visible to attract more talent. And I think there's, of course, organizations are receiving tons of, you know, resumes and applicants because of the current career economy now and what's happening. But if the conversations are always, how do we get the best?
Yeah.
How do you get the best? But so let's turn that around and say, are you presenting the best? Mm-hmm. Are you presenting the best description that's going to attract the best?
Yeah, it goes both ways, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
These are such amazing insights, Orlando. I'm really happy you're sharing that. And I see a note here from Eva, one of our listeners right now. And I love this. I want to just pause on this for a moment. She was explaining about a moment earlier in her career where she saw a certain number of years of experience that was in a job description and that she didn't meet, but she still applied anyways. And she got the job and then, you know, made a great impact there shortly after with other new hires. And I think this point is so important because yes, sure, years of experience hold weight, they can, but I'm a much bigger believer here, and I think more and more we're seeing organizations value this, that it's the experience and the impact distinction, right? Because someone can have 10 years of experience, but if they don't have that much to show for it, what does it really matter, right? Compared to possibly a candidate who might have 4 years of experience, but has done incredible things in that time, right? It just shows the amount of impact that one person can make in a much lesser period of time than a longer period of time. So I really encourage all of our listeners not to get discouraged by years of experience. It's really a guide, like an ideal guide that organizations will put. But please, 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 even if you don't meet that criteria, but you really feel aligned with everything else, just like Eva, please still apply, because at the end of the day, once again, that might not be where they're putting their focus and their decision-making criteria. They just put it as like, yeah, ideally the person has 10 years experience or 5 years experience. Mm-hmm. But if you're like, hey, I have less than that, but I've done all of these things, or I have an amazing track record and I can show that I make that kind of impact in a shorter period of time, that is even more valuable for an employer, because it shows, oh my goodness, imagine what we can do with this particular candidate in the next year alone or the next 2 years alone. And again, it's a lot around how you package that together, how you sell yourself, how you word it in your resume, how you word it on your LinkedIn, how you word it in your interviews and networking conversations. But I really just want to debunk that one, because I know it gets people really stuck, especially younger professionals that are like getting into their fields and they're like, I don't know. I'm seeing all these things with years of experience. I've only ever worked part-time, or I've done like volunteer work. How does that pan out for me? Go for it, you know? And especially just like in Eva's case here, right? When you have the attitude, when you show that you learn fast, that you can hit the ground running, that, and again, what I mentioned earlier around the weight of motivation and attitude holding such a big importance that is often not really qualified in a job description, go for it. Just go for it.
Absolutely. And that goes to your earlier point. It's on the same line as, you know, hiring for the personality as well. It's, you know, and not just the skill set, because you can hire that 10-year person, and they may be so rigid in their thinking and processing. You don't uncover that until they're in the role, versus the five-year person who's showing exceptional movement and is more, you know, more entrepreneurial thinking and saying, hey, we can, you know, we can advance this and capture and do this more and expand this role of this department and add more value here and here and there, because they're creating partnerships internally, whatever the case may be, because the lack of experience is made up tremendously in their ability to be more flexible, right? And maneuver. So there's something that's said highly. And you see articles and things like that that talk about the shift and how they're moving away from heavy skill set to more personality, you know, matches and things like that. And that's probably going to be, you know, a long process because it's turning a big ship. But hopefully organizations that really resonate with that and make sense are pushing that narrative. Brian had a question here.
Yeah.
He says, are employers still chained to traditional job description methods, or are we ready to break free and embrace more authentic and engagement ways to attract top talent? Yeah, great question.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great question. Brian, I think we're with you on that. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I have one of my clients just submitted two incredible video cover letters for two dream organizations she wants to work with. And I was blown away seeing these submissions. And we have, you know, other clients in the talent and acquisition space and whatnot. And it's just, it really shows that you can get creative. And I love it, speaking to this more authentic, engaging way of attracting talent. There's the onus on the employer of what they can do. But I also think there's things as the candidates that we can do to really get the attention, right? When you take the time, and sometimes it's even faster to do this. It might sound counterintuitive, like doing a video is faster than doing, you know, a written type of application or whatnot, but not always, right? If verbal communication is something that's more fluid for you, you feel fairly comfortable on video, this is a great way, once again, of showing your personality, of showing how, yes, you hit on the core elements of the job description, but you're also taking a lot of effort to put in this application. And again, if you're willing to do that as a candidate, just imagine what you do if they hired you. It just sends such a positive first impression. So there's ways that we can do this. And similar on the employer side, instead of, you know, always relying on the more traditional methods, I'd encourage, you know, companies to get more creative. You know, I worked for L'Oreal for many years. And one of the things that really has stood the test of time there was a competition that was a global competition called Brandstorm. And this was specifically oriented to early stage professionals, because as an organization, we still do, but they hire a lot of, you know, university, college professionals as a starting point in their career. And so this competition was a way of getting university students involved with the company, and ultimately led to great hiring decisions after, because you really see these candidates in action, right? But it's not a traditional hiring process. They don't frame it like that, but it ultimately opens up a lot of doors for those particular people. And so I always love that, because I think that level of creativity and innovation, and especially if it gives the candidate the chance to really experience the company, that's going to attract the top talent, right? That's going to attract the people that want to be part of that feel it, that can already get a trial period, if you will, without even being actively hired. I mean, there's just so many fun ways that we can think about going about job descriptions that really bring them to life.
Yep, absolutely. I love that. It reminds me of an event I went to. It was Johnson & Johnson. It's similar in what you talked about, but it wasn't a competition of sorts or event like that. They rented out this location, hotel, massive event. Come learn about Johnson & Johnson, because they were coming to the area. Come to find out, it was a recruiting event. Mm-hmm. So they had you, when you logged in and checked in, you got a certain color. So were you tech was blue, HR was green, you know, data was this, whatever you sales was that. And so I'm quickly walking around like, why do we have different? And then I'm seeing the different leaders who match the color walk up. Hey, how are you? I was like, immediately my first thought, I was like, this is an incredible recruiting event you guys
have put on. I think it's freezing for me. I'm not sure if it's freezing for you.
Oh, yeah, it did. We can still hear you, but not see you. Yeah. There you go.
You're back. We're back. Okay.
Yeah, you're back. We still heard you though. But yeah, so that was something. It drew hundreds of applicants, but it was great. You had the senior leadership team there talking. So it was almost like a bunch of mini town halls where that senior executive or senior director or leader would say, okay, you know, all the folks with green come over here, blue, et cetera. And you would just ask them, fire off questions at them, and they would explain. I was like, super impressive.
That's cool.
It was a casual environment, but well put. They had a panel of the leaders discussing. I was like, this is really nice. I was like, great job, you guys.
I love that.
Yeah.
You know, there's something to be said for these in-person type of events, right? And we're seeing more of that now, thankfully, you know, coming back to the forefront. But there's something that's really hard to replace when we talk about that in-person connection, right?
Yeah.
So also how I landed my initial role with L'Oreal was through in-person networking and being able to have that opportunity. So there's a lot that we can build on there, and organizations can inspire from to do more of that. Get out there in the field, you know, meet your people, encourage them to exchange and engage in your with your employees, right? It's going to give them a really good sense of what they're walking into. Because I will say, one of the things that we often see on the other side, Orlando, of like, once you've gone through the job description, once you've gone through the whole recruitment process, once you've landed the job, where there's a disconnect as the employee, where the job that you were hired for is actually very different than the work that you're actually doing. And so that also just comes back to the importance of the job description, especially on the employer front, to make sure that this is a true reflection of what that person's going to do, because you're going to spend this energy to bring them on and train them, or maybe sometimes not even train them properly, but you're bringing them on only to them wanting to possibly leave prematurely because they were overpromised or misled in some way. So we really want to make sure that the whole journey from job description into the role is very consistent. Very consistent, because that could just lead to a lot of unnecessary frustration and disappointment and turnover.
Absolutely. And it's so crucial where the, you know, HR recruitment team, hiring managers meet. Maybe it's annual, or maybe it's, you know, every 6 months to refresh those job descriptions to, like you said, it's a true reflection of what this role needs and where it needs to go. Right. Yeah. And on top of that, seeing it on the front end, that, like I talked about the diversity inclusion piece there, but what a true career path would look like put that on the job description as well.
Yeah.
Cause it's almost too late to find out once you're in there, then it's okay. I got to go into the intranet and talk about it. Cause the recruiter for the most part may not know as much, right? That internal TA person may not know what that career path may be. So let's put that on the forefront, right? Let's be transparent about where this role can progress to, because I think applicants will be more excited, right? There's a difference of applying through because I need income. Now it's I'm applying because I see where 3 years from now I can be if I stay the course, do the work, put in the time. I'm seeing a clear path. And those are questions you can dive into right up front, right?
Oh, totally.
If this saying, yep, we refreshed this 6 months ago, so this is still an option. You're saying, as long as I'm hitting these metrics and in 2 years, 3 years, there's opportunities that I can at least apply to, at least not saying you automatically get enrolled into it, but I can see a path that I can potentially reach for. I can apply for this role because I'm hitting said metrics and it's clear. Yes, absolutely. That's the trajectory we on. And then, you know, that's how we retain our talent, right? Be fully transparent. I think we're still, for a large part, organizations are just in the refresh mode. And I get it. It's a lot of work to update resumes. It's a lot of, in a huge undertaking, but I think it's so necessary, because if we're still just saying, how do we get top talent? And we're not changing as the employer, you know, the employer is not changing their words. They're setting their laurels and saying, what do we do to do this and do that? Well, here's some examples, right? Yeah. And I always say, bring Tiffany and I to consult with you guys, right? Arizona, we'll dissect and be like, here are some creative ways you can do. What else are you doing? And I get it. It can be more work for the team in the short run, even maybe the long run, but to be able to get more talent to balance it out long term. It's going to be needed. Like, change has to come if you're expecting it. Yeah.
I love that. You know, and one thing that I feel should be added more into job descriptions is what that onboarding process is going to look like.
Ooh,
you know,
that's
like
good.
Give people a taste, right? Don't let them walk into the dark. Let them know how you're going to support them as the employer. What kind of trainings are they going to have? Is there going to be, you know, integration, discovery types of touch points where they can really immerse themselves in the company? Like, that could be a big deciding factor of someone choosing to join your company or another company when they have two great job postings and two great offers possibly in front of them, right? So help them see how you're going to support them as well as the employer. I think that's just really underestimated, right? It's all about, okay, what we need on our end as the employer, but not necessarily what we're going to do for you as the new hire. And I think that's just going to bring a more holistic perspective as well. And also that level of transparency, Orlando, like you're talking about, that could go a long way. I'd love to see that integrated more.
That's good. That's really good. Especially if you have a fine-tuned system saying it's going to be initial conversation with an HR coordinator recruiter. That goes well. Step two would be, you know, a panel discussion. Whether you know it's a two or three step process, clearly outlining that is phenomenal. So the candidate knows. And some companies may be thinking, how do we get all this on the job description? Create hyperlinks for the extensions of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So, you know, recruiting process, hyperextension, you know, diversity, inclusion, career growth. Put hyperlinks, not hyperextensions, but hyperlinks in the job, right? And they can go see that, whether it's through another document or it's, you know, it's a short video from one of the internal recruiters. Hey, glad you landed on our page and are considering us as a preferred employer of choice. Here's what the recruiting process would look like, right? Mm-hmm. Something that can be a little more personable and engaging. I'm like, wow. They just told me exactly how it's going to go. Yeah. And if we don't, and the adverse is, hey, if you don't hear from us, we'll let you know that too. Right. But please keep in mind, because of the influx of resumes to receive, it may take us some time to get back to you, but keep in mind, we're always mindful that transparency and such is what candidates are looking for.
Yeah. Right?
There was a survey that someone did that said, what are some of the things you wish you would get from, you know, employers or recruiters? And the number one thing was, you know, even a rejection email, like, tell me I didn't get it.
Yeah.
Let me know.
Communication.
So, exactly.
Don't Communication solves almost every problem, Orlando. I'm so convinced of that, whether in the recruitment process, in organizational settings, like, communication cannot be underestimated. People just want to know. Yeah. And I mean, especially if they've gone through an extensive process. Right. You know, if they've put time and effort and maybe even submissions, maybe written types of submissions in their whole recruitment process, only to not hear anything back or to be left in limbo, it also can really take a toll on a candidate's confidence, thinking, what did I do wrong? You know, what did I miss? When maybe it has nothing to do with them, they have no reason to think otherwise. Right. So it would go such a long way for, you know, the individuals leading that type of hiring process, even if it is an automated message, I'm sure, you know, that's better than no message at all. But if there is a possibility of even baking in maybe a standardized type of feedback template that can be easily done, somewhat automated, but still have some level of personalization to that candidate, it would go such a long way, right? Maybe this isn't the right opportunity for them, but at least they're walking away with something actionable. You know, and I hear this with people in my audience, you know, all the time when they're like, you know what, I didn't get this particular role, but I got this amazing feedback. And like, I feel really good about that. And I'm like, that is a really good feedback. That's really actionable feedback. And you could totally double down on that and then nail it for the next time, right? But without that, how are we to know? We're just going to start questioning ourselves and questioning, what could we have done differently? What is on us? What's on the employer? And so that creates a really negative, like, vicious spiral that can create this negative aura in the entire recruitment process. And we don't want that, because that can deter amazing talent from coming to your organization. So I think what we're saying here, Orlando, is there's a lot of kind of onus on both sides, right? There's the role of the employer in making sure that job descriptions are as accurate as possible to what they actually need that role to be. That from a candidate standpoint, you know, take it with a grain of salt. If you're meeting about, you know, 70% or so of that criteria, go for it. If you don't have the full years of experience but are somewhat in that vicinity, go for it, right? Never assume the weighting of the criteria being used in the decision-making, right? You're rather focus on what you do have and really elevate that and use that to guide your decision-making and the job description process of how you format your applications. But also on the employer side, getting maybe a little more creative, getting more transparent in some of the things that can be included in the job description. So you really are capturing the best of the best.
Yep. The best, you summed it up perfectly, right? And the last point I would probably add to that would be just knowing that the job seeker has power in those discussions too.
Yeah.
It is a mutual discussion. It's no different than a relationship, right? You share what you share, you deep dive questions, you better understand if it's going to be a good fit. And I get it, right? Some folks are in different positions, but you want to make sure you're partnering with the company for as long as you can and not just for the paycheck, right? Because you don't want to end up in that cycle. So you do have power to, you know, to ask more deeper questions around expectations of the role. And, and so, and keep that cadence through the entire interview process, because it's not a perfect process. But at the same time, don't ever feel as though you're the only one in that hot seat and on, you know, and it feels like an interrogation versus a conversation. So,
100%. I love that. I love that.
I think we're at our sweet spot.
I mean, about there. Yeah. I was just going to say, you know, I really hope everyone is feeling very empowered and that, as you said, Orlando, we have a say in this, and don't let the job description rule you. You can really use this to your advantage, use it to be more specific, more focused, more strategic in the roles that you're going for, and, you know, play into the things that you have and really level those up. To give yourself the best chance at moving forward in that process. And of course, never underestimate the power of networking and relationships, which you've covered in some of our earlier episodes together. So definitely listen to those if you haven't already, because job descriptions and job postings alone will only take you so far, right? If you are looking to make those massive strides happen, put all the cards on your side. Don't over rely on just one facet of the recruitment process.
Yep. I think employers can literally revisit this particular podcast episode and take some actionable advice to improve that. Some that would be no cost to them versus just more time, you know, to do it, set aside the time to make the changes. Some may require, you know, implementing of, like you said, automated a system in their ATS where it gives them ability to send automated responses and things like that. So, and again, I want employers to think if you're in that mindset of saying, and sometimes there's a massive disconnect between hiring managers too, saying, why aren't we getting X from the talent pool? Well, again, as an organization, why aren't you putting out what you're looking for?
Yeah.
Is it dated? Is it antiquated? Right? Is it less attractive? It's not when you were maybe 10 years ago and you're 15 or 20 plus year employee, different time, right?
Yeah.
In order to people have different thought processes, different goals, they're now aligning to their core values. Core values wasn't a 20 year conversation, right? Core values are something that a lot of employees are looking for now. And so that's a good thing. That is a great thing. So how do we match that and present in the proper way to attract that talent? So
100%.
Right. Be a part of the solution managers and team. Don't be part of the just the side of pointing fingers at the TA team or HR team, right? Be a part of the solution in being ready to have those deeper discussions and revamping and improving, et cetera. And again, some will not cost you anything but time and effort, and some may cost a few dollars. And, you know, I think it can be done for sure.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And maybe as a final point on my end, you know, let's see these job description also really reflect the purpose of the organization, what they're working towards longer term. Because when we're talking about attracting talent, it's not just about the day-to-day. They want to feel a part of something. They want to be part of something bigger than themselves, especially, you know, as a younger generation of talent coming into the workforce. It goes far beyond just the tasks that we're requested to do. We want to feel something bigger. We want to feel that purpose. We want to feel connected. We want to feel that sense of belonging. And believe it or not, job descriptions can play a big role in really bringing that vision forward. So yeah, I think we kind of covered it, Orlando, from all angles.
I'm happy with that. So folks, yeah, absolutely. Folks, if wherever you are in your career, if you're currently employed and you saw value in this particular episode, which I'm like 1,000%, we crushed it and brought a ton of value.
We covered a lot. Yeah.
We literally gave you advice, actionable advice that you can implement. Show it to your leaders, right? Let them, you dissect it and bring the idea. That's fine. And I'll put it out there again. Put Tiffany and I on a phone call and see if we can help. You just never know. Yeah. I think what we're talking about is, future of work, improvement. To grab the talent we're all trying to reach. So looking forward to connecting. And if you want to hear more topics like this, or if you have some topics that you haven't heard and you want us to jump into, feel free to reach out to both Tiffy and I, and we'll make an episode for you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. And thank you for those who joined us live with your incredible comments and questions. Always great to have you here. And thank you, Orlando, for another great episode together. And I hope everyone will be tuning in for the next one in a couple of weeks from now.
Sounds good. Have a great weekend, folks. We'll see you on the next one.
All right. Bye.